What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Greg Gregory as we take a look at a movie that is two-thirds awesome, one-third abhorrent, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, everybody? This is the 90s Podcast here on the Cosmic Network. Hope you're doing well today. It is a very, very warm Tuesday evening here in Northwest Louisiana, and I'm joined by Greg Gregory. Greg, how are you, man?
Hey, what's going on, John? I'm doing pretty good, man. It's just kind of been one of those weeks, man, you know?
And it's only Tuesday.
Yeah, right. It's going to take good to take a break to talk about a really crazy movie.
Yeah, this is a unique one. We're gonna dive straight into it, because how can a movie be so outrageous, so good, and yet age so horribly?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons for that.
Jim Carrey himself said that he purposely did things the way he did them to be so outrageous that nobody would believe that, you know, that they could be true. Unfortunately, people believe them to be true, you know.
We'll
get to those points later, but it's just, man,
I mean, it was a product of its time, and you know, just you know, there's a lot of signposts of the era, and unfortunately some of those were kind of negative things, or things that are that aren't that way anymore. No. Or that shouldn't be that way anymore. I can't speak for everyone, but I know in my heart, when I saw some of those things, I went, ooh, ow.
Yes.
Oof. Yeah, that's no bueno. You know, it just, and you know, I think I've mentioned this before, but it's like seeing it as a kid and seeing it as a dad, you know, 20 something years later. It's got a lot of good stuff to it, but yeah, there's definitely some stuff that we'll have to pull apart and dissect a little bit.
We'll get to that here in a minute. But first of all, before we go ahead and get started, let's check out becausewenetwork.com. Let's see, find all of our archive of everything you can go along. Go check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages for the latest news and what's going on with us there. And of course, all of our podcast links are in the podcast description. So if you're watching this, if you listen to this, say, on Apple, and you usually get your podcast on Spotify, we are on there, and vice versa, and so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You find all that in the link in the description below, all right? Or in the podcast description, I should say. But yeah, Ace Ventura, man. How old are you when you first saw it?
It was shortly after it came out. I was probably about 11 and a half, somewhere around there.
I was about 12.
It came the day after my birthday, the day after my 11th birthday. But I didn't see it until probably that summer.
Like when it came out on VHS?
Well, actually, the way that I first saw it was that I was over at a buddy of mine's house in, I guess that was late elementary, early middle. And, it had to be much later than that. It might be then later next year. Because the first time I saw it was like an edited version on TV. So actually it might actually have been a year and a half later or more. It was missing a lot of the, not a lot, but like, you know, when they show movies on TV, a lot of time they'll edit it for time or content.
Yeah.
They cut out some scenes that, or shortened scenes altogether, that I was pretty disappointed in. But basically what they did was they shortened it to an even chunk of time, and then they made it completely, totally PG for the most part. The racy scene in the beginning, some of the other things so it was really interesting to, because my buddy taped that on his VHS and we would watch it all the time. So when I got to see the full version, I was like, whoa, man, they really gutted that thing for TV. So yeah, I must have caught it much like right around the same time you did, because I was watching it on television, like an edited television version.
I caught it when I was about 13, and I saw The Mask first. So I knew that Jim Carrey was outrageous in his acting, but I didn't realize how outrageous it was until I saw Ace Ventura.
Sure. Yeah. I had seen Once Bitten which was what, an indie role that he had done a couple years earlier, or maybe it was like late '80s, actually, a few years earlier. But I had also seen him on In Living Color, and I thought that the Fire Marshal Bill character was absolutely hilarious. His physical comedy, just really, really unique and energetic, especially his faces.
Man with a rubber face.
He's really good at voices too. Like, he's got all kinds of different little accents and little crazy sounds that he can do with his voice. But I mean, his faces to me is like, he really showed that depth and In Living Color. And, you know, as we see on the, you know, that was beneficial to him in his career ended up being.
Now, I didn't know what In Living Color was until somebody mentioned that Jennifer Lopez was a dancer on In Living Color.
I did not know that, but yes. I caught on In Living Color when it was on on Fox. I believe it was on Fox. There was a couple of segments that really stood out. One of them was the Fire Marshal Bill ones, and there was another one I can't remember. Okay, yeah, it was Homie the Clown. Like, I think it was one of the Wayans brothers, and somebody would do something. He'd be like, sorry, sir, you're going to have to park your car. And he would like hit him over the head with this, like, I don't even know what it was. It was like, it looked like a sock that had like a ball in it or something. He'd be like, "Whap, homie, don't play that." And it was stupid and really, really simple, but like just his delivery and the way, yeah. But the Fire Marshal Bill, if you can find a clip on him, if you're unfamiliar, I'm talking about, just look at his face. Like you won't be able to look at anything else in the room. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, the In Living Color got him the part, and there's a lot to go into how this movie kind of shaped up and how it went from one thing to another. Basically put, Morgan Creek wanted a comedy that would have a wide appeal to a wide bunch of audiences. I think they failed, because I don't think this is a movie you can set your kids in front of.
No, not necessarily. I mean, in theory, I guess maybe you could, because the marketing and like the packaging and stuff all looks pretty kosher, pretty friendly. You know, it doesn't look very threatening. It looks you know, like it would have a quote wide appeal. Well, but there's some scenes in there that would beg to differ, though, making it a true family wide appeal.
Well, think about it this way. We just came out of the 80s. This was released in 94, right? So we're a few years removed from the 80s, but the 80s marketed kids' toys of R-rated movies.
And video games too, yeah, man. Yeah. There was Friday the 13th, the video game, and Nightmare on Elm Street, and a bunch of other ones.
Stuff like Ghostbusters and RoboCop too.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know.
And it was weird that it was about, just roughly thinking on the top of my head, it seemed it was a split down the middle of if you played the villain or the hero.
Yeah.
Or good, or if you were good or evil or whatever, because I know you could play as RoboCop, so you're good, but then like you don't get to play as Freddy or Jason.
Yeah,
you get what I'm saying. So anyway,
but they were looking for a Sherlock Holmes type who's also an idiot, and I think his methods show that he's Sherlock Holmes, but his actions show that he's an idiot.
You know, I never got that. I never really got the true idiot vibe. I got just more eccentric.
Yes,
like he does things the way he does them because that's just the way he does them. He's not, you know, he's just like that. He's just a dude that does that kind of thing. You know? I don't think he's dumb at all. I think he proved that in one of the beginning scenes when he outsmarted his landlord a couple different times, different ways. So, I mean, maybe Ace is one of those savants, maybe. Detecting pets and things having to do with detecting a pet is like what he's awesome at.
Well, that's the thing too, right? They rewrote the script for Jim Carrey, obviously, because he wanted to improvise a lot of his stuff. And you can tell a lot of that is improvised by the reactions of everyone else around him. You know, like the scene with the sunflower seeds, where she asks him if he wants an ashtray, and he goes, "Well, thank you, smoking's a dirty habit." Yeah. And Courtney Cox's reaction is like, "What do I say now?"
Yeah, know? Exactly. Yeah, that was so weird. Yeah, yeah. He looked like a hamster over there, just munching on the seeds.
Well, you know, Jim Carrey wasn't the first choice, right? I mean, we go through this with a lot of our movies.
Yeah.
This is probably the best cast of who it could have been that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, there's the one in particular that I went, wow.
Judd Nelson.
Okay, I mean, he's as awesome as Judd Nelson is.
He's harsh.
I don't think that guy's harsh. I don't think he has the range.
No.
Because there's actually more depth than you would think with Ace's character.
Yeah.
Like if you really kind of pay attention to some of the one-on-one parts, you know. Well,
I mean, Carrey's a great actor. Let's not sugarcoat that. Jim Carrey is a phenomenal, serious actor. And like I've said it before and I'll say it again, a lot of comic actors make real, real good serious actors because they got that timing down just perfect. You know, if you got your comic timing down, you can do drama at whatever stage that you want to. Like Leslie Nielsen is the blueprint of that. He was a serious thespian and then he became the Don't Call Me Shirley guy, you know?
Yeah, he's super dry and he just his deadpan and like his delivery totally sells it. And that's one of the strengths of Jim Carrey too, is that he has a lot of energy, but it always serves the scene for the most part. Like he knows when to take it over the top and when to kind of reel it back and let other people do their thing or you know.
He wasn't the spotlight hog at this point. He was always trying to make the feature better rather than make himself look better, which he did have a bad habit of.
Well, this was also a relatively early-ish stage of his career.
Yeah.
One of the bigger productions he'd been in. So it would have been smart for him to play ball and, you know, shake some hands, work hard,
sit down, shut up
out there.
Sit down, shut up, that's what he told.
And well, I mean, I don't want to put it like it's a military camp or something.
No,
but you know, go in and be a pro and give ideas, collaborate, listen to other, you know, show up early, you know.
Yeah.
Get you know, do so. I mean, maybe that's the reason that he had such a prolific career that he went in and you know paid his dues, so to speak.
Apparently, all that went out the window by the time Dumb and Dumber came out.
Yeah.
But another name that was thrown out there was Alan Rickman.
I don't know.
I can't see it either. But
once again another great actor. But
he can do comedy too.
Sure. Yeah, he was great in Dogma. I mean, he was absolutely hilarious in Dogma. And you know, he's a fantastic actor in his own right, or was. God rest his soul. But this last one is mind blowing.
I mean, we'll get to that in a second. But Alan Rickman's comedy chops is in a movie that I'm going to have to cover on here at one point: Galaxy Quest.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I think that movie was largely overlooked.
That movie is so underrated. It's one of the funniest movies ever made.
I think so too. It's really, really good.
And especially if you're a fan of the geek shows that they were parodying, which I am, and you know you are as well. You know, the Star Treks, the Star Wars, and everything like that. It's even funnier.
Plus, it's got Rainn Wilson from The Office in it.
Yes,
as a very minor role. It was years, you know, a couple years before he got his big break. But still, it's just really cool to see a huge celebrity just playing this tiny little role in the background of the movie. It's cool. I think Galaxy Quest. It's good watch.
They said Patrick Stewart, apparently the legend goes, he was in between calls to his lawyers when he got a phone call from Jonathan Frakes, who, for people who don't know, that's Commander Riker from Star Trek. Right. And he just so happened to call about Galaxy Quest. He said, Patrick, have you seen this movie Galaxy Quest? And he's like, yeah, I'm getting with the lawyers right now because I don't want them completely ripping off our work. I don't want them, you know, making fun of us. And Jonathan Frakes says, no. You need to go to a movie theater on a Saturday night and sit dead central and watch this movie. Patrick Stewart said nobody else in the theater laughed as loud or as hard as he did the whole 2 hours. So
it's a funny movie. It's very well made.
And it's got Sigourney Weaver in there. So yeah, the queen of sci-fi.
And her I mean, I don't want to say her prime, but yeah, I mean, she looked great in that. I guess all that extra exercising for Alien and Aliens paid off. She looks great, man. You gotta take care of your body. You know?
She did look great in that movie. But Rick Moranis was the other person pulled up that I could see happening, but he'd gone too family friendly at that point.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, maybe. It's hard. It's just hard to think that any other movie would have happened if Jim Carrey hadn't been at the helm.
I don't think this would have been as good. I don't think we'd be sitting here talking about it if it wasn't Jim Carrey.
Yeah, it might have completely flopped. I think he's because, you know, once we get into the plot, I mean, there's some inconsistencies and some other things that are pretty glaring, but he literally just holds the whole story together, like literally almost single-handedly. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
So are you trying to tell me that Whoopi Goldberg would not have made a great Ace Ventura?
I would pay to see that. If I ever became a billionaire, that would be the first thing on my list. I'd be like, all right, end world hunger. Okay. Check. You know, world peace. Check. Okay. Shot by shot remake of Ace Ventura with Whoopi Goldberg as Ace.
And for those I'm not kidding you. Whoopi Goldberg was going to be the next choice after Rick Moranis turned him down.
So she was seriously considered. She was like the upper tier of consideration.
She was the upper tier. Well, she was also in her comedic prime at that point as well, though.
She's hilarious. And nothing. I'm not taking anything away from her. I mean, she was good in Ghost. And that wasn't even a comedy. And she was hilarious in it.
And she was dying too.
She got Sister Act after that.
Yep.
She's really good in that one.
Threw It All Away was Made in America.
Which I've never even heard of. So I guess.
Really, it's actually you mentioned like big movie big stars and tiny roles. That was Will Smith's movie debut, and he played like fourth character or something like that. He was the girl's best friend. I think that was the daughter's best friend. That's how minor his role was.
That's so random. Yeah, he's actually does the theme song rap for one of the seasons of Saved by the Bell. Which I did not realize until a couple of days ago. It's his rapping is just so kind. It's like just like wants to rap you to sleep gently.
Aggression of a friendly puppy.
It's so friendly. It's kind of refreshing, honestly.
Well, that's why they call him the Fresh Prince.
Butch.
I'm sorry.
And he's easy to find in a snowstorm.
That's right. Well, that's how Darth Vader knows what you got for Christmas. He feels your presence.
exactly.
Okay. Other people who cast you, we talked about Jim Carrey a lot, but you had Courtney Cox in her big film debut as well.
Yeah.
I think, had Friends premiered by 94, or was that a 95, 96 thing?
I believe it was right around the same time. I think Friends is what got her that role.
It's either this got her the Friends role or the Friends role got her this. I know that much about it. I just can't remember the order in which they come in. That was supposed to be Tia Leone. I think she would have done well, but I think she's too... Courtney Cox is very, very passive, whereas Tia Leone is very, very... not aggressive, but, you know, upfront.
Okay. It looks like Ace Ventura came first.
So this got her the Friends role.
Yes.
Okay.
Certainly, it was September of the same year when Friends premiered. So it looks like knowing how long it takes to produce and set up TV, it might have happened within a couple of weeks of that movie coming out.
Dang.
So yeah, we both work in the entertainment and media and all that, and, stuff like that takes time. So. Yeah, that's
I mean, crazy. This humble little podcast took 9 months in pre-production hell trying to find out what the heck I was going to do.
That's what I'm telling you, man. So I just imagine this huge scale of people, putting together these massive movie productions.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, and then Friends, and then she went on to do Scream and some other stuff. So yeah, that came first. Okay, cool.
But yeah, you know, it is. I mean, look, this is what you'd expect from a Jim Carrey movie. Even if it's the first one, it kind of laid down the marker. You know, it's what you'd expect from a Jim Carrey comedy movie. Lots of wacky plot lines, funny faces,
physical comedy. Lots of physical comedy.
Great wardrobe too.
Oh, amazing! I actually found a couple of those shirts, man. I've just been hesitant to pull the trigger on them because they're kind of expensive.
It's the pants. So cool, though.
Maybe I could deduct them off my taxes for the end of the year because I wear them on stage.
There you go.
I don't know. Talk to my accountant about that. Honey.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's talk about the plot real quick because we've got about 3 pages of plot to talk about.
Let's do it, man.
All right. So the movie starts with Ace rescuing a dog from an angry man and all but destroying his car in the process. Yeah. That's one way of looking at it.
Can I add something about the scene? The scene where he's the hilarious scene, bit where he's kicking the box and abusing it,
yes,
and rubbing against the rails. Okay, just a little inconsistency that I happened to notice. Okay, bear with me here because you got to like visualize it a little bit with me.
All right.
Okay, Bass walks up to the door, right?
Yeah.
The door swings inward towards the guy, right?
Yeah.
And then the dog is in just in front of the threshold of the door, right?
Right.
So he gives him the package, he signs for it. Then when he switches the dog is still in the same spot, right?
Yeah, I can see where you're going with this.
The guy shuts the door. Where does the stuffed animal go?
It stays where it is.
Or it pushes it out in the hallway.
That's where it should go.
Because it's in the way of where the door would swing shut. So either it like phased through the door or we just kind of just dropped that and didn't know. Maybe I'm just splitting hairs. I don't know, but I because the way that the door was shut, it was kind of aggressively. So that thing went, woo, flying. It's a stuffed animal. But anyways,
the first minute is already an inconsistency.
I just thought it was, I do think it's hilarious though. And I love how there's just very little dialogue. He's telling so much with his face and his actions. He's just very, very skilled at that.
Just the bit where he's, you know, with the glass box and everything. He's just, you know, handstands and cartwheels and just kind of caught the elevator door while he's just standing there and everybody's looking at him.
It's like he was having a contest to see the most creative way to damage it. Yeah, the next part where he gets rewarded for his services, that was one of the scenes that was omitted from the TV version that I watched probably 5 dozen times. So I totally missed that one. And when I saw it, I was like, what? Okay.
Well, you know, that's one way of getting rid of the finder's fee anyway.
Right?
I don't have any money right now, Mr. Ace. I can take off your pants, though. Okay.
I don't know if I could. I mean, you saw the damage to his car. I think I'd have been like, you know what? I think I'm going to get my car fixed. Thank you, though.
Didn't he bring that up, too, as she says that to him?
It's a high-performance machine. He referred to it as a high-performance machine, yes.
Good. All right. But later on that night in Miami Stadium, a group of individuals break into the Dolphins mascot trained Snowflake. Next morning, Dolphins head of operations and his chief publicist are instructed to find the missing Snowflake for the Super Bowl, out of fear that the theft will affect the superstitious football players. Yeah, sports stars are real, real superstitious.
They can be, some more than others. I dealt with a little bit of that when I played sports at the amateur level too.
Put your right sock on first and your left boot on second or something like that.
If you win a game, we don't wash our socks.
Yeah.
Because the socks are lucky now. And if we wash them, then we're going to lose our streak. And then there was one time that we had like an 11 game streak because we didn't wash our socks.
That must have been nasty to play.
Yeah. I think it was just, Nobody wanted to be near us, maybe. That's why we had such wide open gaps and no one could tackle us. Like ah, oh, man. Oh, gross. Yeah. But yeah, there's lots of athletes who are super superstitious, musicians, well, just people in general. But, high pressure athletes got a lot of riding on them, and so they'll take whatever solace they can. So yeah. Superstitions are one of them. That's it. Yeah.
Well, one of the members of the Dolphin staff had used Ace as a client finder before, so they call in the pet detective to try and investigate it. Now, Ace is probably well equipped to handle, you know, missing pigeons and, you know, dogs and cats and, you know, maybe whatever.
A petty yes. theft loss. Yeah.
Pet. Keyword there is pet detective.
Pet. Right. Not $1 million mascot detective.
It's Ventura, $1 million mascot detective. Alrighty then.
Also, it rolls right off the tongue. Hey, also, what the hell are you doing, Miami Dolphins? You letting people just take your stuff from you like that simply? Like, stadiums are supposed to be like heavily guarded, man. Like, there's
just an inside job that had to have been.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they totally messed that one up. Well, we don't want to give away too much, but I think we'll explain that later on. So
yeah. But Ace is trying to capture a rare bird with a reward of $25,000 with no success. After receiving the request from Melissa, who is Courtney Cox's character, Ace goes to the stadium, takes a look inside the tank, finding a small stone filter in the system. So he's got a clue without even trying.
Sure. Well, I mean, he's like I said, I don't think that he is incompetent. I think he's actually super deft. I just think he's eccentric. So he knew exactly what he was doing, what he was looking for.
You said
so. Or what? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He lacks some skills in some other areas. I mean, he's a little odd and a little weird, but I mean, he can detect like a mofo. I mean, there's no denying that. Another weird thing I noticed when I was rewatching, they have football practice going on in the sidelines.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. They're in game time uniforms.
Yeah.
Which would never happen. No. And also those are obviously not real football players, because if you look at the way that their stances and the way their speed, there's no way. So they had some extras for that. It doesn't take anything away from the authenticity. It's one of those things that like a real sports fan would notice.
Because
they were trying to make it authentic.
Every team trains at the stadium.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that never happens. Like
No, the stadium. Yeah, the stadium is left alone for the most part, so it's nice and groomed. And because that stadium has to pass an inspection before anyone can use it. But it added to the ambiance. It gave it a good background. It was like, oh wow, okay, we're in the stadium. There's like football things happening. Wow. I mean, I get it. You know,
it's designed to make you go, oh, okay.
Sure. So, I mean, to the average person watching it, you wouldn't think anything of it. But it just the guys looked so clunky and just so like like they'd never done that before.
To get around the fact that the press shows up to cover this training, Ace describes himself as an eccentric animal trainer. Now, I never saw this bit until a couple of years ago. Where he pretends to be like the Russian guy or something like that?
I train the dolphin.
Yes.
yeah. It's either French or Russian. I have no idea. It's some crazy accent that I'm not familiar with.
It cut out in the British version after he found the stone. So, like, he finds the stone, it gives a little Ace Ventura detective music, and then cuts to the next scene where he goes and fools his landlord, you know?
Oh, okay. And no, it's this whole thing where they're like, getting Pedactor and Melissa Robinson are getting grilled by the media.
Nice. Yeah.
Like, hey, man, I gotta see Snowflake. I gotta have this trick for 5 o'clock news, and blah, 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 and all this other. So Ace just kind of steps in and takes the heat off away from them by claiming that he's their trainer and he's a part of that Snowflake cannot be seen right now because he is resting.
And he's a diva.
Yeah, exactly. And my favorite line is like, it's this whole thing, but he's like, do you know him? Does he call you at home? Do you have a dorsal fin? he basically saved their butts a little bit. He bought him a little bit of time so that he could keep doing his thing uninterrupted.
There you go. So what does Ace do next? He ends up at the local PD. Now he does the thing with Aguado, which I love that bit.
Yeah.
We stepped on the cockroach. Homicide Ventura, how are you going to solve this one?
Yeah. Well, first we establish a motive.
And then tries to make him guess it.
Yeah, the delivery is really good. I did notice an inconsistency there. The ground changes. When he's up, they're clearly on tile. And then when you go down, it's like cement.
Yes.
So just real, real small. Anyway. But the Aguado scene's absolutely great. This is one of the best interactions in the movie.
And then he meets his friend, Detective Emilio, to find out what leads that the police might have. And they admit that the missing animal case is in the top priority. But they suspect the local animal rights groups who have, you know, they want to get rid of Snowflake because it's animal abuse and so on and so forth.
Oh, that's a logical place to start to point the finger. Sure, absolutely.
But along comes Lois Einhorn, played by Sean Young, who comes out to throw Ace out of the building because she doesn't trust Ace Ventura at all.
She's got really weird energy too. It's like borderline, like, are they going to fight or are they going to, you know, have sex? Like what's going on here? So,
well, that, and when she pulls out of the elevator to see him, Ace is literally talking out of his ass.
Thank you for your cooperation. Do you have a mint? Some banaka. I like when he starts singing. To me, that's the funniest part.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tone Loc did a great job playing Emilio. He did a great job on that.
Excuse me. Sorry about that. So after all this comes out, Ace goes to visit his buddy Woodstock for the New England clam chowder. Is that the red or the white?
I always forget that.
White?
The white?
You know the band who's played in there? That's apparently Jim Carrey's favorite band. You got him a gig. The gig.
Cannibal Corpse? Yeah. That was also omitted from the edited version that I saw many times.
Really?
The entire thing. It just showed him getting thrown into that hallway and then going down to the door. Like, they just totally didn't even explain why he was being thrown into a hallway that looked like it had been, you know, like the CBGB, you know, alleyway or something, all punk rocked out.
Oh, he goes to see him, and Woodstock notices several purchases by a man named Roger Kemp, billionaire, apparently enjoys gathering rare fish. He notes that Kemp donated land to the Miami Dolphins for the building of a brand new stadium, so we have a suspect.
Sure, yes. Someone who's got means and affiliation.
So Ace,
you know, under the impression that it could be an inside job, that's definitely a good place to look. Yeah.
Ace decides to investigate Kemp further and gets into a party thrown by Kemp with an evening with Melissa. As Kemp attempts to seduce Melissa, Ventura investigates Kemp's home and finds a large aquarium tank that he assumes is holding the missing snowflake. So that's the end of Ace Ventura. He was finding the dolphin. No, what it is.
He was eaten by a shark.
Eaten by a shark. Because that's what everybody has, a tank full of sharks.
Sure, sure.
That's the shark tank.
Can I just say the whole move where he like locked the bathroom door and then went out the window and then like took his sweet time about it? That would have given me social anxiety. Like, like either side of that equation, like being him or being out there waiting perpetually for the bathroom. Okay.
No, that's what he's thinking. Like, I have to hurry. I have to get back.
No, I'm saying, but he's like taking his time. It's like, dude, come on. You got water running too. Come on, man.
Excuse me. Sorry. This is late for me on a Tuesday evening. So I apologize for any yawns of escape.
It's getting there too for me, man. I feel you.
Melissa and Ace leave the party. Her very annoyed at him. and him wet as a hen with rags instead of clothes. The detective notices an unusual ring on Kemp's hand. Manhandling the billionaire in order to get a closer look, when they return to the stadium, Ace involves Melissa that the stone he found in Snowflake's tank and Kemp's ring had the same stone. But since no stones were missing, Kemp's not the one responsible for Snowflake's abduction. Well,
right.
Duh. You know, we just found out that he bought that giant tank for a shark.
Sure. Well, you know, I think, you know, it was part of the savant. He sees the shape on the stone, and then he sees the shape on the ring. And you know, if anything, he's looking at it to identify what kind of ring is that.
Yes.
And he immediately knows that's a 1984 AFC Championship ring, which is an actual ring. That really is a ring.
Was that won by the Dolphins that year?
Yeah, that's real deal. Yeah, that was Dan Marino's second season, and they thought they would go back, and they never did. They lost the Super Bowl. They got the AFC Championship, but they went to the Super Bowl and didn't win. So,
well, you know, you can blame Ray Finkel for that one.
Laces out, Dan.
Who's Ray Finkel? Well, Ray Finkel is somebody we'll get to here in a moment.
Yes.
Ace decides to personally investigate all the ring owners to find one with a missing stone. But a list of all the suspects run out with no results. So he goes through the entire team, the entire coaching staff, everybody on that picture, and everybody's got their ring intact.
But there's a caveat.
Yes, there is a caveat. But first, let's talk about the identifying the ring scene.
Yes.
Everything he goes through. The arm wrestling, the getting punched in the head, the running around, the chloroform.
Chloroform the guy. Yeah, I always thought that was funny. The football player though, the way he's acting is kind of the hilarious part, because he's just kind of like one of those dudes they set up in front of the store to attract attention. The waving tube dude with the fan, and he's just like, oh no, what am I gonna do? I thought it was absolutely.
This is basically, this scene is the Scooby-Doo running across the hallway scene.
Yeah.
You know, the only way I can describe it. There's no, it's just music and
it's a montage.
Montage, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, yeah. It's like there's one of them that's off color where he's trying to look at the guy while he's using the bathroom.
Yeah.
I looked it up, and that was actually an active Miami Dolphins football player.
Really?
Which I think is kind of cool that they used real players.
Yeah.
Including Dan Marino, who's has a heavy presence in the movie, for the sake of argument.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. They needed an actual dolphin to legitimize it, I think.
To tie it in.
Yeah. I mean
they got the rights to use the name, so why not use players?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's when somebody says, hey, this is NASCAR diver Dave Smith. And it's like, you know, just some random actor, no. But you know, they throw a real NASCAR driver off. That's like
Cole Trickle. The only NASCAR driver, Cole Trickle.
Oh my word. So
okay.
Melissa tries to console Ace about his failure to find the damaged ring, and Ace is not in the mood until they get a phone call.
Your Sorry.
They get a phone call saying that Roger Pedactor is dead, the third wheel in the whole situation.
Yes.
This is my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's one of them. Yeah, definitely. The condo / balcony thing.
Yeah, with the glass door. La! Ah,
yeah. Ah. So good. I mean, once again, he proves he's not an idiot.
No,
he was able to look at the scene and knew, you know, what the materials did and what they were capable of and how the, you know, so once again, he proves that he's not really an idiot. He's just super good at a couple of things.
It's like psych.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah. A monk
to look at like three different things and then realize exactly what's going on.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. I mean, and he did. He had limited information. He literally went in and looked around, saw the blood under the railing, and then realized, okay. And then he overheard the lady saying that somebody heard scream, and the story didn't match up. If the door was shut, they wouldn't have heard the scream.
Couldn't hear it.
So he was killed inside, or the scream happened inside, and then he was murdered and not committed suicide.
Yes. And so in the apartment, Roger's body was found and crashed into a center of 20 stories below. Oof. Einhorn, who's in charge of the investigation, is prepared to pronounce Pedekta's death suicide. Ace disagrees with him, you know, saying he was murdered. And, right. you know, just as we said. Despite proving his theory to the police, Ace is still upset about not finding the correct ring.
Sure.
Melissa takes Ace to the stadium office to investigate paperwork regarding the sale of rings. There, Ace spots an unfamiliar player that he was not previously on his checklist. Melissa tells Ace that player is a mid-season replacement kicker named
Ray Finkel.
Yeah. Furthermore, Finkel is a player who allegedly kept the Dolphins from winning the 84 Super Bowl by missing the final feed goal in an event called the Kick Heard Round the World.
Yes, a reference to the Norwood wide right.
Yeah, Super Bowl 25.
Yeah, the Giants. Yeah, I remember that one. That's that was a really painful one for them.
Yeah, that resulted in Finkel's contract with the Dolphins being canceled, and he never played football again.
That's probably accurate. That probably would have happened. To be completely honest with you, the NFL is so short term.
So cutthroat. And
there's new blood coming in every year. Guys that are hungrier, faster. Yeah, that would have totally happened.
So they go to Finkel's childhood home and find that it's covered in graffiti and damage from the still bit of townsfolk. Finkel's father is outwardly hostile, points a gun at him. What do you know about Ray Finkel?
He just rattles off his Wikipedia page, basically, before Wikipedia existed. So this dude was, he literally named, like, oh, he was like, four-time ACC kicker of the year, 12-time, was a leader in yards, passing, like just the entire biography.
Well, who are you? I'm just a really big fan, sir.
or you can't forget, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts. That was one of my funniest little liners.
Great one-liner. Slid. Great so one-liner.
Good. Yep, yep.
But it turns out that Ray Finkel was institutionalized in a private hospital many years ago, but escaped. Tour of Finkel's room shows a testament to his hatred of Dan Marino, the player who held the ball for Finkel's kick. And Ray blames the whole incident, saying Marino held the laces in instead of out per regulations. What does that mean? Because I'm not American, I don't know what laces out or laces in means. That's got to be a football term.
When you... The football... You know, it's like a square that's been, or a circle that's been kind of squashed a little bit.
Right.
So you have the laces on one side that you use to grip to throw it.
Oh, okay.
When you're kicking it, you don't want to kick the laces because it'll affect the way the ball spins, because you want it to have a spin to it. So that way, if it hits the pole, it goes in. Okay. So if you do it laces in, it screws up the trajectory of it. So what they do is when the holder, which is either typically a quarterback or a kicker or a punter, because they have the best catching hands, they're used to catching balls. Like a quarterback takes a snap on the shotgun, punter takes a long snap to kick the ball, etc. So they grab it and they put it on the ground, and they practice spinning it so that the laces are pointing towards the goalpost.
Okay.
So what his claim was that Marino didn't spin it all the way around and the laces were in, therefore botching their ability to kick it straight because it went wide right. But if we look at the film, laces were out. They were definitely out. So
the laces were in. They were
just
in.
Trying to, she was trying to, you know, Finkel was trying to blame his failure on somebody else, and if he just accepted that he botched it, maybe
he wouldn't have went
into insanity or whatever. You know, had to go through everything that he went through. You know,
that you know, poor guy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but if anything, at least he got to play in the NFL. That's pretty big honor just to even to suit up. You know.
Well, realizing that Dan Marino is now probably in danger, Ace right. telephones Melissa and requests extra security for the star player, who's filming a commercial for the new gloves, and he's tackled by two guys in Dolphins uniforms, apparently part of the commercials. But they keep carrying him after the director yells cut, and then he's been kidnapped.
Yeah.
So Ace travels in his car that's been beat up, his high-performance machine, with his head out the window.
Yeah, like a dog. Yeah.
I always loved the way he drove that car. When he parked, oh, yeah. it's like a glove.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, all the times. Yeah, he's, yeah, like I said, he's just extremely demonstrative and like physical with everything, not just his face and his body, but like even his props, everything.
Well, Einhorn finds Ace in her office after a press interview, infuriating her until Ace mentions the name Ray Finkel. Ace shares a theory with the lieutenant. The Finkel has come back to take his revenge right at the Super Bowl time when it'll be most harmful for the Dolphins. Snowflake was the first target of revenge because the Dolphins had given Finkel's old number and taught him how to kick a field goal as part of the halftime show. Ouch.
Wow.
I can teach a Dolphin to be better than you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could take it that way. But yeah, there's some truth to that, I guess.
I mean, Ace also theorizes the Pedactor was murdered because he recognized Finkel from previous tenure with the Dolphins. Einhorn applauds Ace for his work and then starts making physical advancements towards Ace, which Ace doesn't, you know.
Yeah, that was a misdirect, I believe. Because I think that Einhorn thought she could use that to distract him. Or yeah. at least, you know, get him off the scent for a little while so she could do something else.
Well, that's the thing, too, right? That's another one of my favorite lines in the movie. How would you like me to make your life a living hell? Well, I'm not ready for a relationship, Lois, but...
I'm not ready for a long-term relationship. Yeah, it's so good.
But I'll give you a call sometime. Is your number still 911?
So good.
See, that's the thing, right? This movie had such great one-liners.
Such and good.
At this point, to this point in the movie, we're like halfway through, and we haven't come up to the bad stuff that made it age like milk.
No, it's towards the end. Yeah.
It's that entire last third of the movie, I think, that did it.
Yeah.
Once we find out Finkel's secret.
Once we find out the twist to the... Yes. Yeah.
And desperate to find out more about who Ray Finkel was, Ace goes to his mental hospital to find out where the ex-player held through his remaining belongings.
Some good stuff there, too.
Yeah.
Funny scenes and just his...
Physical comedy. Yes. Especially just when he's...
What he can do with his body, the way he can express different things when he moves. It's really special.
That touchdown dance with the tutu on.
Yeah, just really, really good, man. Just really, really just physical and funny.
Well, Melissa poses an anguished sister looking to commit her deranged football-obsessed brother to give Ace a chance to explore the hospital. Excuse me. She talks to the doctor while Ace investigates every room in the hospital. Checking the storage room reveals further examples of Finkel's hatred for Dan Marino, along with an unusual article. The failure of the search parties to locate a missing hiker named Lois Einhorn.
Yes.
So the chief of police is in on this. Has to be in on this, right?
I mean, that explains how you could get such a sweet connection by, you know, sneaking into the stadium unnoticed.
Yes.
Because what if your guys are doing the detail on the outside? That could be possible.
Yeah, could be possible.
Yeah, that kind of corroborates and strengthens that would be inconsistency in the beginning.
And now here we come to the bad parts.
Yeah.
The part of the movie that has aged like fine butter. Emiliano checks out Lieutenant Einhorn's desk at the police headquarters, finding a love letter to the lieutenant from Roger Pedactor, dated several days before Roger's death. Ace struggles to find a possible link between Finkel and Einhorn. Finkel and Einhorn. Finkel and Einhorn. Finkel and Einhorn. Einhorn and Finkel.
Einhorn Finkel. Finkel and Einhorn.
Finkel Einhorn. I'm sorry. Just that whole scene leading up to the reveal is just, you know.
Yeah, him reacting to it.
And the monkey kind of doing everything that he does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah. And he's frustrated, but you can tell that he's heading to a breakthrough. Like you can see his mind just works very differently. And he just happened to get that perfect a vision. You know, the dog just laid down perfectly on that piece of paper, and there it was.
Yeah. And there was the truth. Einhorn is Finkel. That's right. Police detective Lewis Einhorn is former NFL kicker Ray Finkel.
Wow. Yeah.
Overjoyed at finding the answer, he leaps for joy and then starts over the top, even for Jim Carrey, over the top.
Repulsion.
Repulsion of the fact that he just, quote unquote, kissed a dude.
Right.
You know, which this is where the movie kind of goes off the rails a little bit.
By today's standards, yeah. I think back then, because it was to mainstream America, it was just very unknown territory.
Yeah.
So it was just weird enough, quote unquote, that to be over the top, which is what they were totally going for.
Well,
but there's something that I'm not sure about though, because Finkel was being Einhorn to assume another identity. So if you're changing your sex, quote unquote, or your appearance of your sex for that reason,
yeah,
I don't know if that would really qualify as being transgender.
So no, that's true. That is true.
If it's strictly to assume another identity falsely, I think you could argue that that would not necessarily fall into that category.
But I think that's what caused all the outrage to begin with, right? Let's leave
it. And that's understandable. I'm trying to undercut that in any way. I'm just, you know, like,
we'll get into that here in a few minutes, but like Carrey's reaction, even for Jim Carrey's over the top, like burning his clothes with a plunger on his face, eating like 18 sticks of gum.
He like lit that huge fire in a trash can in his bathroom.
Yeah,
it's like, dude, what are you doing?
like you know,
it's burn everything down.
It's 1993, Ace. Come on now, you know, it's not right.
Even, it comes off wrong now. Yeah, I don't think it was done with mal intent back then.
No.
But now it just seems it just doesn't seem right. It seems off.
Yeah, it's another definitely one of these things that you look for and think, oh, like when we covered American Pie, you know, it's a lot of that stuff we didn't have names for back when it was happening. You
they
know,
weren't right? official crimes, some of them too.
But I think this was at least in poor taste.
Yeah.
And at worst, straight up transphobic.
Yeah, I think in the right context, but I think there's a little bit of gray area here and there, but once again, I've said it before, and you have too. I mean, I'm not gonna tell somebody what they can be offended by.
No, it's not my.
Especially not. if it's not something that I have any right to. I don't have a right to tell a transgender person how they should feel about as a portrayal of them.
Well, Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey said this: I wanted to keep the action unreal and over the top. When it came time to do my reaction for "quote unquote" kissing a man, I wanted it to be the biggest, most obnoxious, homophobic reaction ever recorded. It's so ridiculous that it can't be taken seriously, even though it's going to guarantee that somebody's going to get offended. The problem is people did take it seriously.
Yeah,
I mean this movie is on the list of, you know, of movies that you shouldn't watch if you were deep in the transgender community. Not just this scene, but like, you know, the villain is an unstable
mentally, you know, unhealthy, deranged, you know, all these negative. I get that. Yeah.
So the morning of the Super Bowl, Ace tells Einhorn. Ace tails Einhorn to a remote boathouse where Dan Marino and Snowflake are being kept. Ace manages to defeat Einhorn's two incompetent henchmen, but is caught by her and held at gunpoint before he can free Dan Marino. She radios the police for assistance, claiming Ace was the one behind the abductions. Smart.
Yeah, she's, you know, no dummy. Einhorn, Finkel, no dummy. It's taken a lot of orchestrating and cunning to be able to get this far, so why stop now?
Well, Einhorn is distracted by news on the Super Bowl, repeating the 84 kick he had around the world. In her rage, where she's screaming, "The laces are in, they were in," and shooting the TV.
Right.
Ace manages to overpower her, and Snowflake takes the lieutenant's gun away. As the police arrive, she orders them to shoot Ace until Melissa arrives holding Emilio at gunpoint, to distract the other officers. And then this part right here, this is another part that kind of doesn't go well either.
Yeah, I don't think it matters like who like your sex or oriented. I like you don't just like rip somebody's clothes off.
No.
Number one.
And make jokes about it while you're doing it, you know. Would you have time to
Yeah.
do these? I'd rip the
So
shirt off.
there's some well that can be done over a week. I mean, I don't know
Yeah.
if it's we're at body shaming, but I mean that's at least sexual assault.
The chief
I
of
mean,
police.
yeah, I
I mean,
mean
look,
witnesses everywhere.
yeah, I mean, look, let's face it, at this point right now, she's still the chief of police.
Sure,
She doesn't
yeah.
become the suspect in the capture and attempted murder for another like 5 minutes.
Yeah,
So, you know.
she's they're still on her side for the moment, but not much longer.
Marino spots the tuck-in, and then Ace realizes why Pedacta died. He learned of her secret and was
Right.
thrown off a window.
Correct,
So, you
because
know.
that would ruin her snowflake plan.
Yes. So
Because she needed
it's.
to be close to some of these people to make that happen. So, once again, there's that cunning, you know.
Yep. Enraged and humiliated by public exposure, Einhorn attempts to stab the pet detective with a big glass of ice. Not glass of ice, big shot of glass.
Yeah.
Ace manages
Oh,
to knock
yeah.
her into the water with snowflake. Quick decision.
And then he does the cool little flip. I always thought that was so cool. I just a perfect little flip over.
Ace notices a ring on her finger, which he leans over and checks in triumph because it is an AFC Championship ring missing two
Missing stone.
stones.
Yep. Why Einhorn chose to wear the ring that pretty much had evidence on it? We'll never know, but it worked out perfectly for him and for the plot, so
Well, you never know these insane, deranged people. You know, I mean, that you saw the Finkel bedroom,
Yeah, and the notebooks
and the
and the
notebooks.
gloves and all that stuff.
Yeah. So as Dan Marino's Snowflake return to the Miami Stadium in time for the Super Bowl halftime show, at the same time, Ace spots the rare bird he's been chasing since the beginning of the movie, only to have it chased away by the opposing team's mascot. Ace and the costume man get into a fight just as the stadium announcer brings the camera onto Ace to thank him for saving the Dolphins. That right there, that had me rolling. Every time I see it, they just start, he starts duking it out with like some.
It's an eagle. It's the
It's on
Eagles
the
mascot. Yeah, and it's he's and they're describing him as a warm, kind man and a lover of animals and all this stuff. And he's just beating this bird senseless. Like his head is completely turned around. He's just like whack, 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 whack.
Oh, goodness me. That's the plot of Ace Ventura right there. Jim Carrey, like I mentioned, Carrey wanted everything he did to be over the top.
It was.
He basically blended about four or five of his In Living Color characters together to become Ace Ventura.
Yeah.
The mannerism, the you know, he wanted to walk like a penguin, not a penguin, a peacock.
Yeah.
And out of everything, believe it or not, Jim Carrey's performance was inspired by Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
He had dinner at Hopkins one night, and they talked about how Lecter moved like a reptile, so Ace Ventura should start moving like a bird, you know, because he's an animal detective, just kind of, you know, strutting around like a peacock and all that stuff. And then once he started talking about the character of Hannibal Lecter, Jim Carrey actually got legitimately frightened.
Because he started doing the shtick to him.
I mean, Anthony Hopkins is a scary dude.
He's a great actor, so he's convincing. Yeah, I would have been kind of freaked out too.
The greatest man from my hometown in terms of art.
Oh
Sorry,
wow, that is
Michael
awesome.
Sheen, but it's Anthony Hopkins all the way.
Nice.
I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry, my
Talking out of
brain just went
his,
blanked.
it's all good. The scenes where he would talk out of his ass came from a heater fight.
Yeah,
A
that's
heater
why my
fight.
brain went blank. I'm reading it, a heater fight.
What is a heater fight?
I think that's a typo.
Okay.
But I don't know what it's typing over.
Wow. Okay. I was like, they plug in heaters. They're like, oh, I'm gonna make you sweaty. No, I'm gonna make you sweater. Ah.
Let's just say it was a fight between him and Ivory Wayans over script ideas, and he started talking out of his rear, which I think it was a trademark of the character. Not a great trademark, but a good trademark at least, anyway.
Yeah.
But,
excuse me.
If I was reviewing this at the time it came out, I'd probably give it an 8 or a 9.
Yeah.
But reviewing it now through 2022's eyes, I can't give it no more than a 5. I mean, it was a great, great movie in its day, but the mental health jokes, the depiction of trans people, the homophobic rants, you can't look away from those now. Those
There's some body shaming as well.
Yeah. I mean,
just a little. So I mean, I agree. I think I agree with you. I wouldn't give it more than 5 or 6.
And unfortunately, those things are not like a joke or, you know, just a wink and a nod. It's an actual plot point, a major plot point. It's the plot point.
Oh, no, that was transphobia was the major crux of the plot. Yeah, actually.
Jim Carrey and Courtney Cox had this kind of weird chemistry too, right? In some scenes, they looked like they'd been acted together for years and had it nailed down. And in other scenes, they looked like they'd never met each other before.
Yeah, it was.
I think
that's spot on. They had some close moments that were when he was describing that dream that he had about the dog.
Yeah,
like that was one of their only charismatic episodes scenes together, in my opinion. Maybe there's other ones, but you're right. Some of them felt kind of clunky.
But Sean Young and Carrey had great chemistry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I think they did it. But I mean, you know, I mean, it launched 1,000 catchphrases, you know, really. All righty then. Like a glove.
Like a glove.
Like a glove.
Or I mean, was a loser.
Loser.
Was that? I can't remember. Yeah. He did a that lot too. Movie. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I think he did them both.
Yeah, I think we're not going to talk about Ace Ventura 2 because that's culturally insensitive. Poor Ace Ventura. Great character, but not in great settings.
Problematic in today's lens in some respects, yeah.
Jim Carrey, man, this is a Jim Carrey vehicle. We can talk about Courtney Cox and Dan Marino and Sean Young all we want to. This is Jim Carrey hour and a half comedy hour.
Yeah. You know,
I mean,
he steals the show.
He'd become an actual actor who plays straight acting, comedy acting, method acting. Good Lord, if you've seen the behind the scenes of the Andy Kaufman movie that he did. I mean, good Lord, he became Andy Kaufman, or what people think Andy Kaufman was, anyway. You know, yeah. I mean, Courtney Cox was able to get her role in Friends off the back of this movie. She became a decorated actor in her own right, but she refuses to watch this movie. She hates it.
I bet she'd like to forget that she was in this one.
Well, that's the thing. Both,
even though it launched her career, basically.
It launched her career, yeah. But Tom Shadyac and Jim Carrey both thought that this first screening would kill their careers. And it did the opposite for them. It launched them. He had success working on things like Patch Adams and The Nutty Professor. Nice. And he also worked with Jim Carrey for Liar Liar and Bruce Almighty.
You know, Liar Liar might be one of his best films.
Yeah, probably his best.
Him personally, just like his performance, like his contribution.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Yeah, I think he excels in PG-13 movies. There are some actors you can't put on any other level than certain, you know, like Tommy Lee Jones is an R-rated actor.
Sure.
You know?
Clint or Schwarzenegger, Stallone.
But you put Jim Carrey in a PG-13 thing and he thrives because he doesn't need, you know, excessive swear words to make his point. He just uses his body.
Yeah, his face, or especially his face, but his body too. Yeah, I mean, he's just very, very good at physical comedy. Just very gifted.
But I mean, you know, this movie has been widely criticized by the trans community for its quote inexcusable gay bashing and transsexual transgender bashing. Also, the portrayal of a trans woman as the killer and being mentally unstable.
Yeah, that's fair, man. I mean, you know, but
it's fair.
I don't think anybody was intending to do that. I kind of mentioned that earlier. It doesn't excuse it by any means, but nonetheless,
it was an unintentional consequence.
Yeah, we're doing, I think we're doing better than that now as a whole. So yeah, that's we could, good. We can learn from this.
Everybody says, oh, you can't make jokes like that anymore. No, it's not can't. We just won't make jokes like that anymore. Because
I don't think it's funny.
No.
Personally. I mean, no. I don't know. Maybe it's just my personal taste, or maybe I've evolved over the past 27 years or whenever this came out.
I mean, that's why it was hard to rewatch it, you know.
Yeah, it was. I mean, there's some good parts in it.
Yeah, like I said, the first two thirds of this movie are absolutely comedy at its finest. It's the last third that brings it down.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, because it's not just a joke and a wink and a nod, it's an actual major plot point. That's what brings it down.
I agree with that, man. It's unfortunate. I agree with you totally, man. I would have gave it a probably 8 or 9 back in the day, but now I couldn't give it any more than like a 5, 6 maybe.
All right. So that is Ace Ventura, everybody. What are your opinion on Ace? Why don't you let us know? Go check out our Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook pages and drop us a line.
All righty then.
Greg, it's been awesome to have you on, man. We've got you for one more episode in a couple of weeks. We'll be back here in a couple of minutes. And not a problem. Have a good one, bro.
All right, man. Peace.
Everybody, we got a couple of minutes before we go ahead and get out of here. Sincere thank you to Greg Gregory once again for coming on. Greg will be back in a couple of weeks where we talk about Sonic the Hedgehog. Yes. I haven't done many things on Sonic. We've done a lot on Mario. We've done Donkey Kong. Nothing on Sonic. So we're going to be talking about Sonic the Hedgehog during the 90s, especially his first three games. And of course, you can catch Greg on the holodex.com. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just a little out of it right now. I'll explain why here in a minute. Starting on Tuesday, we have our Crash Bandicoot series over on the 90s Game over on our YouTube channel. We begin our playthrough of Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back. That will be coming up on Tuesday and Thursdays, okay, going forward for the next few weeks. I'm having a lot of fun playing it, and yeah, it's a real, real good thing going on over there. So go check out our YouTube channel, subscribe, and all that nonsense that you do on YouTube, okay? Next week, I'll be joined by Sarah Connolly as we talk about the fifth album of a great Britpop band. We take on Blur's self-titled album. We look at the background behind it, and we look at what the album meant for the Britpop scene in general and for what it did for Blur going forward, and more importantly, what it did for Damon Albarn going forward. Should have a lot of fun there. So, let's address the yellow and blue-shaped elephant in the room right now. We recorded the main part of this segment, the main Ace Ventura stuff, a couple of weeks ago. I got sick, so I couldn't bring it out last week. But yeah, we recorded it a couple of weeks ago, and before the world went to shit, and, you know, we have listeners in Ukraine, we have listeners in Russia, and, you know, not many, but, you know, it's just, it's horrible what's going on over there. So, you know, many, many smarter people, more smart than I am, have had their say on what's going on. So, you know, what am I going to say, you know? it's what am I going to say that's anything different? So just keep the people of Ukraine in your thoughts and your prayers and your whatever you do to, you know, keep people, I don't know. But, yeah, so just, you know, there's a lot of evil in this world and we're seeing it firsthand right now. Yeah, so that is it for this week. Yeah, so go ahead and get vaccinated, wear a mask, hug your loved ones. That's an important one this week. Stay hydrated, you beautiful, beautiful people, and we will see you next week. All right, take it easy, everybody. Bye.